We are back with 6th District Congressman Andy Barr. Good morning.
Good morning, Jack. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Of course, I join my colleagues in the Congress and President Trump in extending our condolences to our friends in the United Kingdom for the barbaric attack in Manchester. And we had a moment of silence and prayer in the House chamber yesterday, honoring the victims and extending our sympathies to the people of Britain for this this wicked attack. And it just underscores and reminds us that this is a dangerous world, and we have to stand as a civilized world in solidarity with our allies in condemning this reprehensible and wicked ideology, radical Islam, that remains an important threat. And so it's important we remain vigilant and have a no-tolerance policy.
I know if you were privy to information that we're not, you couldn't say, but is there anything more going on behind the scenes on this deal?
Well, you know, of course, first of all, we know that there are 22 dead. These are innocent children and teenagers, many of them, who are attending a concert, exercising their freedoms.
Sure.
So that's the first point. There's 59 additional wounded.
But ISIS has claimed responsibility, but then I keep hearing there's no evidence of that.
Well, ISIS has claimed responsibility. There have been 3 additional arrests by the British authorities right now, and so an investigation is underway, and of course Congress and our intelligence services are busy looking into it as well. But all signs do point to a radical Islamic terrorist attack. A suicide bomber.
If you want to talk about this, you're welcome to. Let's move on to a couple of other subjects that are very important. I know you've been going around and meeting your constituents in these town hall formats, particularly about the American Health Care Act. And this morning, I thought maybe we could debunk some of the myths about the American Health Care Act as it involves pre-existing conditions.
Yeah, and first of all, I just want to appreciate my constituents, including those who disagree with me, for coming out to these meetings. That's what they're for. You know, if there's one thing that we pride ourselves on in terms of the hallmark of our representation, it's accessibility. And so we've done these copies with your congressman, office hours, town hall meetings, precisely for the purpose of letting us listen to our constituents, including those who have. Now, some of them, to be fair, they're there for the purpose of being disruptive,
right?
And shouting, and that's not constructive. And certainly, the left and the mainstream press in this country, they're just unhinged because they're still upset about the outcome of the election. That's not as constructive. But what is constructive is when someone who has a pre-existing condition or a loved one with cancer or MS or kidney disease has a genuine question,
right,
about what we're doing. And I want to address and reassure those constituents who are not there to disrupt but have genuine concerns about what it is that we're doing. We're in a rescue mode. Regardless of the outcome of last fall's election, we were going to be in this place. We were going to be in a position where we had to act. We have an obligation to act to fix the broken healthcare system that we have, because costs are skyrocketing, because almost on a daily basis, my office or me personally, we're getting feedback from constituents who are suffering under this law, meaning that they have lost their health care, they've lost their choices, they've lost their doctors, they're facing double-digit premium increases year over year. And so we have an obligation to do what we did in terms of trying to fix health care. But on the issue of pre-existing conditions, that's the most common concern about the changes that we're making. The first thing I would say is that if anybody is newly covered or has Medicaid for the first time under the previous changes, they're grandfathered in, and there's not going to be any changes. Nobody's going to lose their coverage. But health care options will grow, and so people will change plans because they're going to find better options, specifically with these tax credits. But on the issue of pre-existing conditions, in our bill, the American Health Care Act, we provide multiple layers of protection for people with chronic illnesses like arthritis, like cancer, like MS and kidney disease and other Parkinson's. We care very deeply about families who are struggling with those disabling conditions. And so, number one, the default rule is that there's no discrimination for people with pre-existing condition. We maintain guaranteed issue, meaning that if you have an illness like this, insurance companies are required to issue a policy. But in order to bend the cost curve down, we allow states to waive out of that, but only on the condition that they provide alternative protections for people with pre-existing conditions. So while there may be in a waiver state for someone who does not maintain continuous coverage, the possibility that an insurance company could charge more or what's called medical subject that patient to medical underwriting, meaning that they could charge them more for their health status, we protect that individual through $138 billion of state and patient stability fund and an invisible reinsurance program that worked very well in Maine and Idaho, so that the higher costs associated with that patient are offloaded onto the taxpayer through what's called an invisible reinsurance program. That just means that we're going to maintain low costs for healthy people in the individual market, and for people who have chronic diseases and pre-existing conditions, they also will not only be covered, but we're going to keep their insurance premiums affordable through this program. So again, there's multiple protections for people with pre-existing conditions, not just that they have guaranteed access to coverage, but also that we're going to protect them from exorbitant and excessive increases in their costs.
Here's a question on our Scheller text line. This is Jim asking Andy if Rand Paul is on board with him on this bill.
Well, Senator Paul has made a contribution to the debate insofar as he has supported association health plans. I applaud Senator Paul for that. I agree with Senator Paul. I think association health plans is an idea that's been around for many, many decades. In fact, it was an idea that the Republicans in Congress were promoting back in the mid-1990s when I was a staffer on Capitol Hill. And so the time has come that we use these pooling mechanisms to give people who don't have access to employer-provided or government-provided health care pooling mechanisms to lower the cost of their care and diversify that risk. The problem is that under the Senate's rules, that kind of a reform cannot happen without 60 votes in the Senate. So the House of Representatives, in a separate bill, we've passed that reform that Senator Paul is championing, the Association Health Plans. We've passed that bill out of the House. The Senate, however, has not passed that bill. And they haven't passed that bill because they need 60 votes to get it done. And regrettably, I don't know if there are 8 Democrats who agree with Senator Paul on that bill. But I would encourage Senator Paul to look at that bill that we've sent over to him. I'd encourage all members of the Senate to look at that bill we've sent over to the Senate that does exactly what they've called for. Pass that bill, get the 60 votes, pass that bill. But also, with respect to the bill that we passed, take a look at that bill. We want them to, if they want to make some changes and innovate on it, and if they disagree with some of the provisions, that's fine. That's their prerogative. But send us something back, because the American people need relief, and they need it right away.
Back with Representative Andy Barr, and we've got Mike on the line and been very patient with us. Mike, good morning.
Morning. I just wanted to say, looking at the budget that the president has put together, you know, I'm a retired veteran, upper-middle-class white man, and used to live in New York, so I've dealt with the likes of Chuckie Schumer forever until I moved to the state of Kentucky. And what I wanted to say and is, why is it that the dependent class is, you know, has so much power to demand that the productive people like myself, who's made, worked hard all my life, saved, made the right decisions, why is it that they feel so entitled to demand that I, and even the wealthy, you know, pay for their lifestyle?
Well, Mike,
it just doesn't make any sense to me that they have so much power to come out and say, oh, well, these people are going to suffer. A lot of these people are people that have made poor decisions for most of their life, and that's why they're in the lot that they're in. And they continue to make bad decisions, and yet they can demand that I pay for their health care. They can demand that I pay for their food, that I pay for their housing. And it just irritates me that, you know, I can't stand up, or and my politicians won't stand up and say, no, if you're sucking on the teat of the cow, you don't get to say how much milk you get.
Well, Mike, first of all, thanks for your service to your country. And, if anyone has the right to express frustration and right to express your mind, it's someone like you who served your country and not only earned the right to do so for yourself, but secured that right for everybody else. And when you see these protests at these town halls, I always thank the veterans for giving them the right to do so. What I would say to you is that I agree with much of your sentiment from the standpoint that there are able-bodied, work-capable adults who are unfortunately dependent on government services when we really want for them something far, far better for them and their families and for their potential. And that is self-sufficiency, and that is independence from the government so that they can actually build the American dream for themselves. And clearly, over the last decade or so, we've seen an explosion in government dependency, from food stamps to Medicaid to housing subsidies, and not just for the elderly or children or in poverty or people who are below the poverty line or people who have or individuals with disabilities who are not capable of working, but people who are working age adults who are receiving benefits. And when I travel around the 6th District, and when I speak to plant managers and employers and HR managers, they consistently tell me to not raise the minimum wage, but instead reform welfare, because they say they can't compete with the government. People who are work capable are not applying for jobs because the government is paying them to not work. And so let's just take, for example, Medicaid. 70 million Americans on Medicaid. Yes, of course, the traditional Medicaid population, we need a safety net for folks who cannot work, the dual-eligible elderly, impoverished children and families, and certainly individuals with disabilities who can't work. But there are 10 million Americans who are work-capable, able-bodied adults without dependents who we think a governor should have the flexibility to apply work requirements as a condition of receiving Medicaid. That's good for those individuals because it gets them on the upward ladder of success, and it also allows them to access better health care through work. So we appreciate your comments, and we're working to fix a lot of that welfare problem.
Only about 30 seconds left. I'll give it to you. You have about 30 seconds. Wrap us up here.
Well, I think, let me just say this. I think we all need to be paying attention to the president's trip overseas. I think the president's trip becoming a big success from the standpoint of reaffirming America's leadership in the world, of continuing to rebuild key relationships with our allies in the Sunni moderate Muslim world, also with Israel, that unshakable alliance that needs to be rebuilt, and to repair the damage done by the disastrous Iran nuclear deal. And finally, the visit today with the Pope. The president is uniting all peoples of faith from the three great religions, Christianity, the Jewish faith, and also the Muslim world, that stands united against radical Islamic terrorism.
Thank you very much for being with us.